center of its kind for adult survivors of child sexual abuse. Donate at littlewarriors.ca/ourlighthouse. By Pattison Outdoor, Global Edmonton, and 630 CHED.
This is Global News. It's 9:30. I'm Morgan Smith. Whatever police found at the scene of a man's death on Wednesday night, it was suspicious enough that EPS has handed the investigation over to the homicide unit. An autopsy on the 37-year-old who was found dead in a residence near 118th Avenue and 95A Street is set for today. EPS says officers responding to a trouble not known call discovered the body. The dangerous cold continues in Edmonton and almost all of Western Canada, with temperatures topping out in the mid-minus 30s and wind chills 10 degrees colder. Yesterday, Edmonton was colder than parts of Siberia and Antarctica. Alberta EMS says it's already seen a jump in hypothermia and frostbite cases, but none of them have been life-threatening. Hope Mission putting out an urgent call for donations of winter wear and cash. It's spooling up 1,000 emergency beds, but it's only funded for 850. Councillor Aaron Paquette says Edmonton's considering bringing in vacant oil camp housing for our homeless. Edmonton's Mayor Amarjeet Sohi calling an emergency council meeting for Monday and is asking that housing and homelessness be declared an emergency. 6:30 CHED News Time, 9:31.
Your patients really trust you.
Do you trust me?
He's experimenting on people.
Dr. Death, all new Sundays, only on Showcase.
6:30 CHED weather. That extreme cold warning still in effect. Wind chills in the minus 40s possible today as we reach for a mostly sunny high of minus 34. Right now in Edmonton, minus 36 degrees, feeling like minus 41 with the wind chill. I'm Morgan Smith, your next scheduled newscast at 10 on 6:30 CHED.
He said, I want to see you again, but I'm stuck in cold weather.
Listening to Shea Ganim on 6:30 CHED, Edmonton's News. Today's talk.
She said, you're a rambling man, and you ain't ever gonna change. You got a gypsy soul to blame, and you were born for leaving. Born for leaving.
Colder weather. The Zac Brown Band. If you listen to me at all, you know that I'm not a big country and Western music fan, but Zac Brown is an exception. Chris Stapleton is an exception. Both those guys, I mean, they're country-esque, I would say, at best. But boy, that's a good song. Colder Weather. There's a version of that if you look online. He's doing it. I think it might be at Red Rocks. Just him and a guitar. Oh, man, is it good. 780-496-0063-403-974-8255. We were talking about the people that may find this kind of weather harder than your average Albertan does. Obviously, people who have to work outside, tip of the hat to you. My goodness, I can't imagine it. But I would like to spend a day like today with someone from a country where, you know, where it never gets below zero, like not even close to zero. And they're, you know, any equatorial country, just to see what it's like to be someone who's never seen this before, never experienced this before, and just walk out into minus 36 degree weather with a wind chill of minus 45. Like, that's life-changing, I would think, right? Like, that's like stepping onto the surface of another planet. And there are thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of Canadians getting their first taste of that wintry weather right now. They've never experienced this before. We've talked before about how immigration to this country is at remarkable levels, unseen before kind of levels, hundreds of thousands of people, and it's happening. And, you know, you can't deny the fact that we have a housing crisis. We hear about that all the time. Healthcare, I'll tell you more about that later, but the Canadian Medical Association coming out with a warning yesterday saying we're overwhelmed, we can't keep up. So we've got different pressures that we already have in this country, and it's a big catch-22 because the way that we want to try and deal with them is through immigration, but when you have increased immigration, you have increased pressures. It's time that we come up with a plan, perhaps, because the government says, no, full speed ahead, we're going to continue. Well, what does that mean? The math alone tells you it's gonna create some issues. Aaron Woodrick is the domestic program director with McDonald Lurie Institute and recently wrote a piece about this. Aaron, thanks for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Shane.
So, I mean, let's start with the state of immigration in Canada. I mean, we are a country of immigrants. I'm pro-immigration. I think it's an important thing, but I think we got to have a plan, as you say. And you take a look at it right now, and the numbers, I mean, we know what the plan is there. They're way up and staying up, right?
Absolutely. And you're right. I consider myself pro-immigration too, Shane. I think that's why it's important that we have this frank conversation about immigration, you know, the pros and cons. You mentioned Catch-22 earlier. I think that's a good way to put it. You know, there are no magic solutions. There are only trade-offs. And I think we need to have a sober look at the benefits and the challenges that immigration brings. Some people want to emphasize only one or the other. But the reality is a lot depends on the number of immigrants, the class of immigrants that we bring in, for example, high skill, low skill. So there's a big debate over students coming in. There's effectively what is effectively a loophole as part of the overall immigration numbers right now. So I think it's important we have this conversation for a long time. You know, this country's just sort of drifted along, generally pro-immigration. That's a good thing, I think. But right now, there are a lot of people that are reluctant to talk about it because they're afraid of being called, you know, discriminatory or racist. But that's really not what this is about, right?
No, you're absolutely right. And that's the trap that you don't want to fall into, because that's not what it's about in any way, shape, or form. It's just about being realistic here. So let's go through why we're putting such a focus on immigration and legitimate arguments. We need the labor. We need our schools, need the revenue. That's a big one we don't talk about that much. So listen, it's providing us a service in this country. We do need immigration, right?
Absolutely. I mean, for the folks who say, well, let's just close the doors for a while. Well, I mean, I think there would be a lot of unintended consequences. Boy, if you think prices are high now, I mean, a lot of people have cost of living issues. Can you imagine if you know, people can't find low paid labor, they're going to have to start really hiking up salaries. That's great for people who are getting hired. Not great if you're a customer that's paying, right? So there are consequences to sort of cutting off that supply of labor. As well as, you know, there's a contribution to the housing issue. Obviously, a lot of Canadians can't even afford a house. Adding more immigrants, obviously, just adds to the demand side. But some of those, you know, some of the immigrants are also a solution on the supply side. We need people to help build those houses, and they provide some of that labor. The same applies to things like doctors, right? A lot of Canadians can't find a family doctor. Yep. Well, a lot of immigrants, high-skilled ones, they're going to be the ones who can fill those roles. So there are trade-offs involved here.
Indeed. What are the unintended consequences? Hey, take a look at that. And let's start with the foreign student visas. We've talked about that before on the show, but not that much. And I mean, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of these being issued, and they've become something more than just an opportunity to study, right? It's a bit of a backdoor that's been set up.
It absolutely is. It's a loophole that's basically being exploited. I mean, if you break it down, there are a lot of colleges, especially some universities, but mostly colleges across Canada, that basically use international students as a cash cow. They can charge them a lot more. They don't have a cap on the number they can bring in. So it's very appealing for them to attract international students. A lot of these students who come here, you know, a lot of them they have dubious educational qualifications. Some of them don't even really attend their courses. They work part-time because they're allowed to. And eventually, they use the degree they get or the diploma they get from these colleges to try and qualify for permanent residency status. So it's essentially a backdoor to a different level of status. And I think it's important, you know, we should be able to decide as a country, you know, how many permanent residency permits do we want to offer? We can have that debate and decide on a number, but we can't allow this loophole that just allows people to take a different path to access that when that was never the purpose of it in the first place.
As we need the help and it comes to labor, and more people means more and more pressure on the areas of scarcity. And that's what you're talking about, right, Aaron? Housing is the one that I mentioned. But like I say, there was just a report out from the Canadian Medical Association talking about healthcare. And, you know, can you plan for that? Like, what's the answer? Because I don't know what it is. To me, it seems like a perfect catch-22. If you want to answer the issue with labor shortages when it comes to building housing, that's part of the reason we can't build housing. We need more labor. Okay, but they need housing. So I don't know what the answer is there. Healthcare, you mentioned it. We can bring in doctors, okay? But all the people that we're bringing in, they need healthcare. So what is the answer? I mean, can it be done? Is there a way to make everybody happy all at the same time?
I don't think you can make it perfect, but you can make the system better than it is now. And so part of it is the composition of the immigrants that you bring in. If, for example, there are certain very specialized, highly educated roles that we just simply can't find the people in Canada, then we may have to have special categories and allow people in, like doctors, like engineers, things that are very specialized. When it comes to the more low skill labor, the lower paid labor, I mean, a lot of people say, well, we need to bring in foreign workers because we can't find Canadians. Well, part of the other reason we can't find Canadian labor is because in certain parts of the country in particular, the entitlements that the Canadians can access makes working not very attractive.
Yeah.
They can work less or they can work seasonally. So you have to address that. If you make it, if you make it less comfortable for some people to work part of the year, for example, those people are then going to work. So you kind of solve that problem with the existing labor force. So that's a discussion a lot of governments don't want to have because it's, of course, very unpopular to cut entitlements. But if that is what's causing us to look to foreign labor to solve this problem, I think it's creating a new problem rather than addressing the one we have.
In your piece, you make an excellent point, and it's something that I think we need to talk more about. And you and I both sitting here saying, hey, we're pro-immigration, but we recognize there are some issues here. And you make the point that most Canadians are pro-immigration. Most Canadians, I mean, almost all Canadians are immigrants or descendants of immigrants. That's how this country was built. So we got that understanding. But some of our enthusiasm, our zeal, and our acceptance gets eroded when we start to see these other pressures, right? That's a big risk we need to be aware of.
It absolutely is. And, you know, I think part of it is economic. And part of it, as I mentioned in the piece, then this is the most taboo part of it, is that it's cultural, right? I don't want to cast aspersions on people. I don't think it's racist to say, you know, if you are around people in large numbers who aren't like you, don't speak your language, have different cultural preferences, for some people it's very uncomfortable, right? And I think we should be able to talk about that. You know, I liken it to this, Shay. There are people who, they like to try different types of food, right? It's exciting for them. They like it. Other people know what they like and they like to stick to eating it, right? They're not very adventurous. Neither of those things is better or worse. It's just people's preference. And I think we need to have a discussion in this country about, you know, what is the level of immigration that we're comfortable with, that everyone can agree that, you know, these are people that are coming here because they want to join our national project. And I frankly think, you know, we do have racists in this country, but the vast majority of Canadians, they love their country and they want to welcome people here who want to be part of our project going forward.
I think you're right. Absolutely. Great points. Aaron, thank you so much for your time today. I really do appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Shay.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.